Hate is having some money problems. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishor in for David Brancaccio. There's news that Discover Financial Services is ending merchant agreements with what it deems are hate groups. Visa and MasterCard have also said they're getting rid of payment options for sites that incite violence. Marketplace's Andy Euler's been looking into how hate groups are funded and joins us live. Andy, how big of a step is this toward limiting funding for hate groups?
Well, it should at least limit the access of sites that promote hate and prejudice from processing payments for things like T-shirts and books that supporters are trying to buy, and also donations that a lot of these sites are seeking. Now, beyond credit card companies like these, other big players in online payments are also taking action. The Southern Poverty Law Center puts together an annual list of hate groups and says a lot of them use PayPal and Amazon to make their money. Now, both companies have come out this week saying that hate groups don't meet their terms and conditions, so their services should be shut down. The donation website GoFundMe has also banned fundraising efforts on behalf of James Fields, the man charged with driving his car into protesters in Charlottesville.
How successful can these companies be at cutting ties with what are probably dozens of individual websites and organizations?
Yeah, that's where it gets complicated. PayPal, for example, is the money transferring tool of choice for a lot of these websites. That company has limited some of them, but it hasn't disabled them all. I did just a cursory search this morning and found that people can still purchase books and apparel on neo-Nazi and white supremacist websites using Amazon and PayPal both. These groups are also able to get around limited processing payment options through other lesser-known third-party providers. So it's an uphill battle for all these companies.
All right, Marketplace's Andy Euler, thank you. And let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 0.2% range, with the Dow future down 14 points. 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.24%. Amidst the dizzying aftermath of events in Charlottesville last weekend and calls for presidential advisor Steve Bannon to resign, he gave an unexpected, kind of random interview with Prospect Magazine, in which he said the United States is fighting an economic war, quote unquote, with China. Mr. Bannon reportedly told the magazine that if the U.S. continued losing this war, it would hit a point from which it would never be able to recover, the BBC's Vincent Nee reports.
Steve Bannon is not the only one in the Trump White House to make such remarks. President Trump's White House Director of National Trade Council, Peter Navarro, has for a long time been criticizing China on its trade imbalances with the United States. In an interview with the BBC last year, he labeled China as a currency manipulator and vowed to take actions against China once Trump came to power. But despite repeated bashing on China's trade practices from Trump's close advisors, China's position has always been clear that China does not want to engage in a trade war with the United States and that trade is not a zero-sum game.
The BBC's Vincent Nee. Walmart earnings are due out this morning. Analysts are expecting the company to report increased sales, particularly online sales. That is key for Walmart as it tries to outmaneuver rival Amazon. Walmart and Amazon represent two sides of the U.S. economy locked in a bitter feud, brick and mortar versus online sales. And we think of Amazon as the upstart in all of this and Walmart as the stalwart. But there are signs that might be changing. Josh Brown is CEO of Ritholtz Wealth Management and joins us now. Good morning, Josh.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So you argue that it's actually Amazon that is the maturing company here, while Walmart is on the verge of a breakout for the first time.
Amazon is starting to look more like a classic incumbent. And Walmart is acting in a very aggressive way, and they're starting to look like they want to be more of a disruptor. They acquired Jet.com. They paid a couple of billion dollars for it. A lot of people at the time said, you're buying this online discounting site with very little revenue and obviously no profits, and you're paying a lot. But the real question is, can they afford not to? So you saw explosive e-commerce comps, meaning comparisons this year versus last year. Wall Street is getting excited about what Walmart is doing with technology for the first time in a long time.
Amazon is still, though, a legit disruptor. Can we say that? Its stock price is high. It's driven shares and brick and mortar companies lower.
Right. But when you've already disrupted everyone and your market cap is equivalent or higher than every other competitor's market cap combined, you're no longer the disruptor. Now you're the 400-pound gorilla. And that's not a bad thing. However, there are things that Walmart's doing in-store with the way that they're allowing customers to check themselves out with their own phones, for example. And there are things that Walmart is doing with e-commerce. And what's interesting is while they're doing that, Amazon's kind of on this parallel track where they're trying to build up the logistical capability and the brick-and-mortar capability, frankly, that Walmart already possesses.
Well, just as you said, Walmart and Amazon each have kind of what the other wants. Amazon has this terrific online sales program, and Walmart has physical ubiquity. Who is the threat to who?
You have Amazon buying Whole Foods, which is essentially a chain of 100-some-odd brick-and-mortar supermarkets, which is as brutal a business as any business, and they're paying almost $14 billion for it. Walmart already has that brick-and-mortar infrastructure. So anything that Amazon does with Whole Foods, just as an example, Walmart can probably do as well. The old phase where we're thinking about Amazon pulling sales away from Walmart retail stores, probably we're through that period.
All right, Josh Brown, CEO of Ritholtz Wealth Management. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishor with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.